My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South Dixie Group. I haven't found enough to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. I'm in my 43rd year of sobriety. I'm 72 years old, married 43 years, raised 4 kids, 8 grandkids, and for the most part, self-supporting through my own contributions, and it's good to be here. And yes, you love me now, but let's see how you're doing after I'm done with this group. You know, we'll see how that works out. And so I don't, I know quite a few of you guys here. I've seen you around. I've been around for a while. And funny enough, I do a lot of the stuff, a lot of step series and things like that up in Broward and Palm Beach and here. Not so much in Miami. They don't like me so much in Miami. Close in my hometown. Jesus had the same problem, you know. Not that I compare myself. I do compare myself to Jesus, and I'm wanting in that regard, you know. But I mean, they said he could do no miracles in his own hometown. The prophet's never honored in his own place, you know. But I get to go to different places, and I think I'm doing a convention in Bermuda, and I get to go up there. And when I go to these places, you know, generally what they like to hear and. And sometimes I do this. I do stick close to this, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, which is not what I'm going to do tonight, because I don't really do that much anymore. I don't talk about drinking. I'm not going to talk about drink tonight. It's not my shtick, you know, and I'm at a different point in my life. I've been at a different point for many, many years now, quite frankly. There's plenty of people that will tell you drinking stories, and they're all good, and I love a good drunkologue. And for years, I used to listen to the same Clancy tape. It took exactly 45 minutes to an hour to listen to this tape, but that's how long it took me to drive to work. So I'd listen to this one Clancy tape, 1981 tape he did at the Tar Heel Convention on the way into work, and I'd listen to it on the way back. And I did that for 2 years in a row. I love the tape so much. And when I was intergroup banquet chairman for about 2 years in a row, and I brought the first guy I brought down was Johnny Harris, whose tape I also loved, a wonderful tape. And then the last guy I brought down was, and then I brought down Clancy. And he did a marvelous talk, but I hated the talk because it wasn't the talk that I was used to. You know, I wanted everybody to hear that talk, you know, the most sensational talk. And to this day, if some of you guys get my email, on the email is Johnny Harris's talk and his talk. And so I love a good drunkologue and I love good talks, but it's just not my shtick anymore. It's not my deal. And I have a different purpose in life now, a little different. I love newcomers. I love everybody. I'm an AA. I'm available to anybody, and I'll talk to, answer questions. I have a workshop every Saturday morning, a 2-hour workshop. We get a lot of people there, and we have a great time. And I go to at least 3 meetings, Zoom meetings a day, one at 7 o'clock in the morning, one at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and one at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which, quite frankly, I've been going to 3 meetings a day, come to think of it, way before Zoom. I would, driving into my office, I would go to a 7 a.m. meeting, get to my office at 9. At lunch, I would go to a noon meeting. And then on the way home, I'd go to a 5:30 meeting, like I used to go to the bar. So, and sometimes at night, I would go with my sponsor to an 8:30 meeting. So it's not unusual for me to go to a lot of meetings. And I'm not saying you have to do that. That's just the way I was brought up. And, you know, the whole thing, don't drink and go to meetings, you know, put the, you know, the plug in the jug, meeting makers make it, all that sort of stuff and everything. All good stuff. It's just not my deal right now. I mean, I do it all now, but I just do it all now for fun and profit. And because it's part of my life, and that's my life. That's my life. Like the guy asked me one Saturday night, I was 7 years sober, and we were at a Denny's after the Arch Creek meet. I don't know how many people remember the Arch Creek group. Every Saturday night, they'd have a great meet with all the old timers, Ray O'Keefe, one of my mentors. And afterwards, we'd go to a place and have coffee and everything. I had a new guy, and I think I had about 5 or 7 years at the time. We're sitting there having coffee on a Saturday night, you know, and I'm a guy. My whole life is chasing blondes, brunettes, and redheads. So I know about the higher power thing. But, you know, anything. You're taping this, so I can't even say what I want to say. But anything that had any woman was my higher power. I spent years scouring the bars, you know, lounge lizard, looking for a gal I could hook up with. It was a woman, or it was a new car so I could get a woman. It was a job where I could make money so I could get a woman. You know, I was a womanaholic. I've been a womanaholic. I'm a please love me aholic. I got so many aholic things going on. And that's the deal with me. But the bottom line is I'm sitting there on a Saturday night. Frank Sinatra used to, if there may be some people here that are my age or older that remembers Frank Sinatra used to sing a song. Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. And, you know, if I had a gal, I was on top of the world. You know, that gal's like a booze, a woman's like booze to me. I walk into a bar with a good-looking blonde, and all the guys are looking at me, and I'm saying I'm feeling like on top of the world. I'm a real man. But by the same token, if I don't have a gal, I feel like killing myself or drinking or something like that. I mean, I'm a galaholic. I'm a whatever it is, you know, because you have no self-worth. It's all about wondering what people are thinking about you and wanting people to like you and wanting people to care. You know, there's no inner whatever the hell it is. There's nothing solid inside. It's all bullshit. And the bottom line is, I'm at this place on a Saturday night, and the guy says, I said, so how'd you like the meeting? And he says to me, he says, oh, it was great. He says, but what do you guys do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him I was having a great time. And that's, you know, I've done the whole world shit. You know, the world thing, you know, the cruises, the going to Europe, the going to Indonesia, the going all over the place, the cars, I got all the cars, you know, everything. You know, I mean, I've done the deal, okay? I mean, I've done everything, but I've done a lot. I mean, I could die tonight, right now, and I'm perfectly satisfied. I'm ready to go. Bags are packed. I'm ready to go. I have no bucket list whatsoever. Nothing on my bucket list, okay? And if you ask me, what would I like to do for the rest of my life? I like to hang around meetings like this and talk to people and spot, you know, that kind of stuff. So I that's it. You know, I told the guy the truth. He said, what do you guys do for fun? I said, and thinking to myself, I'm having a fucking blast. I don't know about this guy. So this is what I do for fun. My wife and I are going to take a cruise to some cruise. We do these cruises. So we're doing a cruise down the Seine or something, Danube, something like that. And a lot of these times I do these things, and I'll be very honest with you, it's because of my wife. Because I love my wife, and, you know, she's like an AA widow. And, you know, most times I'm at meetings and stuff like that, so I do the cruises. Of course, it's an AA cruise. There's going to be some AA people there. But when I'm on a cruise or I'm away or something like that, the only thing I'm thinking in the back of my mind is it's like a sacrifice for me, because what I'm thinking is I'm not going to my meetings. I'm not hanging around with my guys. I'm not doing it because this is my life. This is, I can't even say, isn't this such a great sacrifice I'm doing, because it gives me pleasure. You know what I mean? It gives me pleasure to do this stuff. It gives me pleasure to drive up here with the guys and have dinner, and that's where I get my pleasure. I was told a long time ago, if you don't have a purpose in life, you're going to be to a certain extent neurotic, and my purpose is to carry this message. I'm a Christian guy. I'm just telling you, you don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to love the Lord, you know? When I was, and the reason I'm telling you this for a reason, because it's just my life, you know? The big book says, it says two things. It says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we'd be sober a long time ago. Such codes and morals, next right thing, good orderly direction, group of drunks, all that's crap. He didn't help us. And therefore, we wrote a book about God. We wrote about God. We had to find a power by which we could live. Not only stop drinking, by which we could live, you know, as sober individuals. You know, not individuals that run around telling ourselves all the time that we don't give a shit what other people think about us. You know, that's what we do. We're delusional. Our alcoholic life seems the only normal us. We lie to ourselves. We say to ourselves, I don't give a crap what they think about me. And usually the time when we're saying that to ourselves, we can say it so many times to ourselves, maybe we'll start believing it. But usually the time when an alcoholic is telling himself he doesn't give a crap what other people think about him, he's usually saying that after he's spent a long period of time thinking about what other people are thinking about him. And, you know, bottom line is people that really don't worry about what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a shit what people think about them. They don't say it in that sort of like resentful, angry tone, you know. And I know what the new freedom is, and I know what the new happiness is. And I'm not a member of the not drinking club. There's not wrong with being a member of the not drinking club. You could be a member of the not drinking club for, you know, 10 or 20 years, and then you'll probably drink if you don't get out of that club. You gotta somehow separate from the boys. You know, there's a sixth step that says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. When you become a man, you become rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You experience much of heaven, you know, peace. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's because you're not there yet. It's as simple as that. The only thing you need to have is rigorous honesty, and that's non-bullshit honesty. You gotta be honest with yourself, because the first step in getting out of jail is you gotta know you're in jail in the first place. So if you want to bullshit yourself into thinking you got it and you don't got it, you know, that's a whole other deal, you know. So when I was first coming up the ranks, you know, and I used to, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, you say, man, if I only got 10 years, I'd be wonderful. If I only got 20 years, I'd be wonderful. And everything would be wonderful. If I only had double digits, if I only had one, and all that stuff is good, you say so. But the bottom line is, it looks like everybody's, I've been there. I got to 10 years and I crashed and burned. I didn't drink, but I crashed and burned. Bill Wilson wrote the big book at 5 years. We know he was divinely inspired because I had 5 years. I know a lot of guys 5 years. Nobody could have written the stuff in that book in 5 years unless you're divinely inspired. He wrote the 12 and 12 in 17 years. At 20 years sobriety, he was popping LSD in order to try not to kill himself. If he had drank, which he didn't do, he just popped LSD. You know what I mean? If he drank, then I guess, I don't know whether he'd still be considered a co-founder. I guess he would have had to pick up a white chick or something like that. I know a gazillion people that crashed and burned after 10 or 15 or 20 years sobriety. I see more people in AA saying, I have 11 years and then I drank. I had 20 years and then I drank. I had 35 years and then I drank. I had 15 years and then I drank. So I guess you'd have to say that for me, and I understand that deal. I honestly, I don't know whether this makes any sense to you, because you have to understand, I've changed a lot in the last 43 years. I mean, I you got to trust me, there's been some change. I was in my living room about 3 or 4 days ago. I think I shared this at one of the meetings. And I could hear my wife was listening to something from the other room. She had it turned up pretty loud. And I didn't I sort of recognized it, but I didn't recognize that. I didn't know what he was listening to and everything like that. But it was like disturbing my peace because I was trying to watch something on TV. And so I went into the room. And, you know, it was obviously somebody talking at a meeting or something like that. And she actually scans my talks to see if there's something there she can criticize me on, you know what I mean? Because she's a member of Al-Anon, our ladies of perpetual revenge. You know? She does a great Al-Anon 10-step. When I'm wrong, she probably admits it. So I walked in. I said, what are you listening to? He says, I'm listening to one of your talks. And I didn't recognize it. I honestly didn't recognize. I didn't recognize the voice. I recognized the talk. You know, I go right up to. I listen. I said, I remember some of the stuff. I remember it and everything like that. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't know. This is going to sound kind of strange. I'm just going to tell you the truth. I said it wasn't me. I mean, I know it was a talk I gave. I mean, I know I gave that talk, but it wasn't me. Because it was apparently a talk, she says, this is a talk you gave in 2010, 13 years ago. I'm not the man I was 13 years ago. There was nothing wrong with the talk. She liked the talk. A lot of people like the talk. I have guys call me and says, man, I love that talk you gave, blah, blah, blah. I said, when was that? He says, 2003. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that it wasn't me. Because I couldn't give that talk. I don't give that talk. I can't give that. I'm not that person. I'm a different person, okay? So my talks are different. And the big book says each man, it says, so of course, in chapter agnostics, it says we had to find a power by which we could live. And that means, what that means is, of course, we wrote a book where we're going to talk about God. And with alcoholics, here's where the trouble begins. You understand what that means? Do you know what that means? When they say with alcoholics, here's where the trouble, you know what it means when they say in the book? See, the problem is people read the big book, but they have no idea what the fuck they're reading. My first wife said, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I graduated with departmental honors in mathematics. I was a National Science Foundation fellowship. I was going for a PhD in algebraic topology. I became a lawyer. I was the division chief in the state's attorney's office. I was as sober as I am right now, and my first wife said, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. 12 words. I drove the car, 8 o'clock in the morning, 3 blocks, and I said to myself, what the fuck did she mean by that? I was baffled. Well, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, sobriety would be precarious and true happiness you find out at all. The booze is not the problem. Trust me, the booze is not the problem. Somebody tells me, how do I stop drinking? I said, you got to fucking drink. Never rob an alcoholic of his desperation. You drink. Well, I might die. Yeah, but alcoholics are about as common as dirt. It's not a big deal if you die. You know, it's not like... No, it really isn't. We crash into people and kill families of four and walk out like with a black eye. You know what I mean? You're not going to see a magazine cover saying, those incredible fucking alcoholics. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to miss us, okay? But you might have a chance of getting to the point where you hit bottom, and why all this insistence on hitting bottom? Because nobody's going to do the shit we're going to tell you to do. unless you think your life depends upon it, which is why AA's in the shape it's in right now. A lot of people not doing shit and picking up medallions and patting themselves on the back when they're not really doing the program. A lot of horse shit, you know? But, well, thank you very much for that standing fucking ovation, okay? So here's the deal. Why don't you all read, I'm not saying you all, I know some of you have, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Take a chance of reading what the AA, it says, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That was written in 39. AA started in 35. Between 35 and 39, all they were doing was reading the Bible. The books they found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. You couldn't go to AA meeting unless you got down on your knees and proclaimed yourself to God. You asked Dr. Bob what his first things first meant. He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. You know, if you look at Dr. Bob sponsoring or 12-stepping, Clarence, the brewmaster, went up to him. The first question he said, do you believe in God? Well, I don't know. What does that have to do with it? Everything. Well, I guess I do. Guess nothing. You either do or you don't. I do. I do. Good. Get down on your knees by your hospital bed and see. And then they said the prayer of salvation. Okay. And then Clarence says this great line. This is all out of a conference approved material. Not that I give a shit what the conference says, because I've researched the conference. Number one, first thing I got to realize is they didn't fucking invite me. I wasn't part of the conference. Second thing I know is this is not Well People's Anonymous, okay? Third thing I know is the guy with the longest time in AA had 23 years. And I just listened to a tape when I had 30 years. I didn't even recognize myself because I've changed that much in 13 years. Now, I'm not saying the comps is bad or any of that stuff is bad. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. AA is not, does not have all power. Your group doesn't have all power. Your sponsor doesn't have all power. President of the United States doesn't have all power. Nobody has all power. Only one person has all power. One man has all power. That one is God. Do you know what I mean? So I don't base my life. My higher power is not some guy. I said, you believe in God? He said, yeah, you believe in God. I said, you believe in God? He said, yeah. I says, do you believe God? He said, what are you talking about? I said, do you believe God? He said, I swear, I don't understand what you're talking about. I said, I just asked you whether you believe in God. You said you did. He says, yeah, so I'm asking you, do you believe God? He says, I swear, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, you know why you don't know why you're talking about it? He says, no, he says, because you don't have a God. You just believe in a fucking concept. Bill Wilson said, not many people understand this, but Bill Wilson said, it said, see, this is where you get back to the chapter of the agnostics, when you understand what you're actually reading. And you'll understand what you're actually reading when you understand what's actually going on in AA and you understand what alcoholism looks like. You know, you understand what you're actually dealing with, because the drink is not the problem. The problem centers in your mind, not your body. There's something broken in there. And what's broken in there is a separation from God. That's what Sandy Beach used to say. It's all about separation from God. And then you understand why people in AA hate God. And you get it. You understand what's actually going on here. And there's a reason why they say in the big book, there's a reason why Dr. Bob, the last words he said to Bill Wilson, you know what the last words he said to Bill Wilson were? Anybody know that? Last words? He said, Bill, let's not fuck this thing up. Keep it simple. Let me tell you something. When the co-founder comes up to you and says, listen, don't screw this thing up. Keep it simple. He's not complimenting you. He sees something in you that's fucked up. You understand what I'm saying? And he's worried about it because Bob was solid, solid. He had a solid foundation. The concrete was sound and he had the foundation. The foundation was God. He wasn't ashamed of God. One of the things that the Lord said, the God of mine said, says, if you're ashamed of me before God, I'll be ashamed of you before the Father. And when you start understanding how important God was to them in 1939, in 1935, in 1936, in 1937, in 1938, you start understanding that it's not a punchline on a fucking joke. You start understanding when they say there is one who has all power. You start understanding when they say God is everything or he's nothing. They were serious. You start understanding says there is no middle of the road solution. You either do or you don't. Half measures avail you nothing. You start understanding that. You understand, say, if you keep your old ideas, your result was nil. You start understanding when they say things like this. It's the things like this. But we cannot be sure whether you'll know us. But that's okay, because your real reliance has to be in God. He'll even show you how to create the fellowship you crave. The fellowship you crave, if God is showing you what the fellowship, it's going to be a godly fellowship. And then when you start understanding how serious they were, when they said things like, we're on a new basis, the basis of trusting and believing in God, All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They trust their God. Instead, they let him demonstrate through their testimony what he has done for them. At once, they begin to outgrow fear. And you start to understand the whole thing is about God. So your relationship with him is God. God is right. Job or no job, as long as you trust God, you understand that God is the whole thing. Then you understand a little bit of what they meant when they said in the big book, which is our basic text, in the big book, when they said, therefore, of course, we have to talk about God. Here's where the problem occurs with alcoholics. I.e., one of the things that will show you what an alcoholic is, or whether somebody has alcoholism, is if they have resentment against God. They hate God. They hate people that talk about God. They hate the idea of God. They hate a personal God. Then you start realizing that what Bill Wilson said was he didn't say God as you understand them. That's everybody thinks that. You think that's what he said? Now let me tell you what he said. He said, I hated the idea of a personal God. I hated the idea of a personal God. So then my friend said, well, why don't you pick a God of your understanding? Sort of like some sort of fuzzy, sort of vague, God of your understanding. And this is what Bill Wilson said. He said, I could see from there I could make my beginning. All growth could start from that point. We got people with 20 years sobriety that are drinking because they never got past the beginning. So why do alcoholics hate God? Well, I started when I was 10 years sober and I crashed and burned. I went up to somebody, tapped them on the shoulder, and I didn't know what to do because I was doing everything in AA. 8 years on Relay, sponsoring everything in sight, doing all sorts of meetings, everything. I mean, I'm an attorney. I get paid by the hour to bullshit. I'm a paid bullshit artist. You know what I mean? You know, I'll look a judge in the eye and say, you know, my guy's been caught on videotape for stabbing 3 nuns and a priest. I'll look at a judge in the eye and say, not guilty, judge. You know, I mean, I can say shit. I say shit, you know, with sincerity, you know. And so I can do that. But here, you know, the bottom line is this, and it's simple. They get to a point where you have to either own up to the truth and find out what's going on or not. And I finally went up to this guy, and he said, and I was desperate. Desperation is a great thing because it has you doing, why all this insistence on hitting bottom? Nobody's going to do this stuff. So the guy said to me, he said, well, you ought to start going to Bible study. You ought to start doing the stuff they were doing in 1935, and start going to Bible study. And, of course, then I became acquainted with a whole group of men who were in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, 30, 40 years older than me, who were studying the Bible, which is basically the big book. You wouldn't know that unless you studied. If you studied the Bible, you know that the Bible is really the big book. You know, you'd understand that. You'd understand that everything in the Bible is from the taken from the big book, and you get that, and then except it's just a bigger book. It's a bigger book, okay? And so I started studying that, and then I started understanding in my mind, not in your mind, who God was. And the specifics, and what he said, and how I'm supposed to act, and how I'm supposed to live my life. And it's not that I live my life that way. But I understood the rules, the clear-cut directions. I understood what a godly man was and what a bullshit artist was. I understood what a godly man was and somebody who's just playing the game was. And so even though I'm breaking the rules in the face of God, and I know I'm breaking the rules. So I believe him when he says things. So, you know, so and that's the bias. So I have a God that I can actually look to. He's not fuzzy to me. You understand? I don't have a fuzzy, ambiguous. There's this great line in the Bible. I love these lines in the Bible because they're so truthful. There's this great line. It says, forget about the Jesus thing, but here's the line. You'll love this line because it explains a lot. It says, the line says this. The verdict is this. A light has come into the world, and men ran away from the light into the darkness, because their deeds were evil. Now I'm gonna interpret that. I'm gonna translate that into Alcanese, okay, for you, in words you'll understand. A light has come into the world. There is a God. A light has come into the world. And Alkies ran away from the light because their deeds were selfish. Because they're selfish. And the bottom line is the reason why Alkies hate God is because they're selfish. And they want to continue their selfish, self-centered lives. And they don't want anybody fucking telling them what to do. And they don't want anybody making them feel guilty or ashamed. And the bottom line is, you don't get anywhere in this deal unless you feel guilty or ashamed. You don't change unless you feel guilty and ashamed of yourself and your actions. Which is, by the way, why in the big book it says the way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations and the crushing of our self-sufficiency. And the way we get crushed is we get humiliated and ashamed. That's how it happens, because godly, worldly sorrow leads to self-pity and leads to death. And I'm a self-pityaholic, but godly sorrow leads to repentance and being ashamed and saying, I want to change. And that's what caused you to pick up the white chip. And so men run away from God and hate God, and alcoholics hate God. So when I hear some guy, and so we have a big book that says, what does it say? What does it say in the book? It says, when we never apologize for God, it says, all men of faith, what? All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. So you're sitting there in an A room, and maybe you want to say something about God, or you want to talk about God, but you sort of like filter yourself because you don't say anything about God because you know that people won't like you. And so you self-censor yourself because you don't want people to laugh at you or be ashamed of you. So what happens is you talk about your resentments, you talk about relationships, you talk about your problems, you talk about that. The one thing you don't talk about is God. Because one guy once came up to you and said, you're killing newcomers, you know what I mean? And what you have to understand is if the big book is right, and if the sixth step means that you finally, if you're separated out, become a man who's trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. Cops approve shit, by the way. If that is what the sixth step is all about, separating the men from the boys, and all men of faith have courage, then if you don't talk about God at meetings, it's only because you don't have any courage and you don't have any faith and you don't really believe in God and you're full of shit. And since the big book says things like, what does it say about religion? We lose all resentment, prejudice, even against ordinary religion, we begin to say, so you hear some people putting down religion and say, I'm spiritual, not, sort of like, what is that, what an alcoholic say? I love when they say this, I'm spiritual, not religious. Anybody ever say I'm spiritual? I used to say that. I mean, I got to plead guilty. I used to say I'm spiritual, not religious. I am the most material girl in the world. I am Madonna. I am the Madonna of maledom. I am a material man and a material. You're a spiritual? Put your hand here and give me a ball-peen hammer. Let me see how spiritual you are when I hit it. Let me see how spiritual you are when the IRS comes in and takes all your money. If the one thing is I know about myself now is I am material. One day, maybe soon, because I'm 74, maybe soon for all of you, you'll all get to be spiritual. One day you'll walk, but you're not spiritual right now as long as you're running in this crazy planet. You are subject to the whims and caprices of the world, just like Bill Wilson was subject to the whims and caprices of the world and the vagaries of this world and what's going on this earth, which is why you're living. That's why you live lives of quiet desperation, even though you're sober 15 years after that. That's why people drink again. Because they start thinking because they've got 20 years or 10 years, 15 years that they're spiritual, not religious. They like put that, that's a way of like putting down religious. I finally achieved spirituality. I finally got it. I'm spiritual, not religious. Not like those religious people. I'm like really righteous, you know? I mean, what total fucking horse shit. Really, how can you really? Man, I'll tell you something, I'm spiritual. Spirit, give me a fucking break. Your flesh and blood and your material and you lust and you love the things of this world and you're not drinking and you help a few people and you start thinking like you're Jesus or something. I mean, give me a break. You're anything, and here's the deal. I got to be honest with you. When a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money. The man with money will walk away with an experience. There's something about don't put down time. You think time's bullshit? Try to get some. You change with time. You know what I see at 43 years? Let me tell you what I see at 43 years. When I was 5 years, I thought everybody was getting sober. When I was 10 years, I thought everybody was sober. When I thought 15 years, I thought everybody was getting sober. 20 years, everybody was getting sober. 43 years, nobody's sober. Nobody's sober. Maybe in this room, you probably have a few guys with 40 years. Let me tell you something. Between 20 years and 40 years is like a vast wasteland. And AA's been around for 9 years. There should be a lot of guys with 30 and 40 years sobriety running around here. All I hear about, you know what? I have a heart for old time. I have a heart for the. There are. Let me tell you something. If statistics are true, 10 years from now, half people in this room will be drinking. I actually lied when I said that. Because the true statistics are, in 10 or 15 years, probably most of the people in this room will be drinking. You don't have to believe that. But I'll tell you, next time you go to meetings, you start listening to people talk about how many guys who had time, who went out and drank. So I have a heart for guys, because I know there's a guy here with 11 years who thinks he's doing okay, who in 6 months is going to be drunk. I know there's a guy with 2 or 3 years here that seems to be doing okay, and he'll give a good speech, and I know in 3 or 4 years he's going to be drunk. See, I know they're all over the place. I know the fact that it's that picking up, that hanging around with the fellowship, I call it the bucket of crabs sometimes, hanging around with the fellowship, picking up chips, pats on the back, all that stuff is great, and I know if that's all you do, and you listen to everybody in this fellowship and everything like that, and you don't go further with this thing, you don't take this thing further, you're not going to make it to 30, 40 years. Bill Wilson, when after he did the LSD thing, he wrote an essay, which nobody ever reads or anything. You ought to pick it up sometime. The reason why I love Bill Wilson is he was an alkie just like me. And even though he had a lot of trouble, you know what he did after that? He wrote about it in a thing called The Next Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. And you know what he said? He said a bunch of things. It's like a 4-page essay. I'm going to boil it down for you. He said, one of the things I've noticed after 23 years, that's what you want to know about the conference. When you start thinking about the conference, the guy with the longest time in the conference had 23 years. I got 20 years more than that now. Not that I'm in any great shape, but you learn a lot. Let me tell you something. You learn a lot between 23 years and 43 years. You do. You don't stop learning. I hope you don't stop learning. You see a lot. You see that when you cast away God and you have a fellowship where nobody talks about God, where people are ashamed of God, where you walk up to people and you tell them don't talk about God, and you go from a fellowship where the whole thing was about God to a fellowship where it's absolutely clear that you never talk about God because you're killing newcomers. Bullshit. You know what I mean? That you're killing because you don't want people talking about God. Let's talk about the real reason why we don't want people to talk about God, because then we'll have to talk about God and we don't really have a God. It makes us feel uncomfortable. Let's talk about the real reason that we want people. Let's say in the old days, you had to prove to them that you were ready. Now we beg people to stay in. We always, alcoholics always take a bad motive and cover it up with a virtuous motive. If you're an alcoholic, the one thing you want is you want people to like you. That's what you want. You want people to like you. You don't want people to talk about you behind your back. You don't want people to say, that guy, Ross, he's what an asshole. You don't want people to talk about you behind your back. You want people to say how great you are, right? You don't want some new guy walk out in the room because not liking you. You got to go after him and say, please, you know, and everything like that. See, you think that you don't say things to people because you don't want to hurt their feelings. And the truth is you don't want to hurt your feelings. You want to be validated. That's the real truth. Because all alcoholics, you know, they don't really know who or what they are. They think, you know, they value... That all they're thinking is, what does he think? You know, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? It's all about me. What does he think about me? Why did he walk out on me? Why is he looking at me funny? Why is he saying things about me? I'll tell you what true freedom is. True freedom is not worrying about what other people think about you. True freedom is about not worrying about what other people think. You know, there's only one person I worry about what he thinks about me. And that's my Lord. To tell the truth. And to be my own man and not worry about what some guy in some AA meeting who's not even paying my visa bill thinks about me, who's going to drink anyway in the next 10 years. You know, I mean, that's what that's the true freedom and that's the true happiness. And that's what I talk about. That's why there's a difference between me now and me at 20 years or me at 10 years. I couldn't give this talk to 10 years or 20, you know what I mean? And that's the bottom line. You have to understand that if you ever read Dr. Bob, the Good Old Timers, and you read what they were doing back then and what this program really is, where they said, rarely have seen a person fail who was thoroughly, by the way, the word is thoroughly, followed our path. You'll see when you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers that this fellowship has changed drastically 180 degrees between 1935 and 2000, whatever the hell we are, 2023. I used to call it the bucket of crabs. You know, because it is sort of like a bucket of crap. Now, let me tell you this. I love it because, you know, something I get. And you know why I love it? Well, first of all, the groups I actually hang around with, they talk a lot about God. But you know, but I go all over the place and I talk about this. I don't talk any differently in the groups I hang around with than the groups I come to right here, because I have a purpose. And my purpose is to try to carry the message, that the original message, that I'm not conference-approved guy, but I'm a founders-approved guy. You know, I'm a big book guy and a founders-approved guy. I know what the big book really says about this stuff. And it doesn't say what they're saying in the rooms. You know, if you go out crabbing and you catch a crab, you throw it into a bucket. But the crab will crawl out of the bucket. So if you want to keep the crab in the bucket, you know what you gotta do? You gotta catch another crab. Throw him in the bucket. When the first crab starts crawling out of the bucket, the second crab will grab that crab and it'll bring him right down. So if you're in A room, you start talking about God or talking like I'm talking, don't worry, some old timer, some guy with 15 years will come up to you and tell you shut up and don't talk about God. You're killing newcomers and it'll pull you right back down into the bucket. And then you can be one of those guys saying I had 15 years and then I drank again. Because I wasn't allowed to grow up. Because the fellowship, because this ain't Well People's Anonymous. It's hundreds of thousands of people trying to stay sober in the not drinking club, but not getting crazy about the God thing. And the guys in 1935 were crazy about the God thing, if they lasted. The whole thing was the God thing. So this thing won't kill you. It's only me. I mean, you know, it's like you're not going to get anything like this. This is what I talk about. I don't talk about the drinking thing. You got a million people to talk about the drinking thing. You can have a good laugh. I could do it. When I go to the convention, I'll talk about the drinking thing. We'll all have a great laugh. You know, be a lot of, you know, I can talk. I got great stories about the drinking thing. You know what I mean? But the bottom line is that's not what's missing in the fellowship today. What's missing in the fellowship today is guys that are talking about the thing that you're gonna either be thinking about or not thinking about or worried about on your deathbed. They're gonna be talking about the important shit. You know, that the big book and the 12 and 12 was serious about. You know, they're not gonna be talking about the stuff that you know, the drinking thing, nobody's drinking in AA. And the only guy that's drinking after they come out of AA is the guys that were drinking that didn't get the God thing. Didn't hear this message. Because they thought if you just don't drink and go to meetings, everything would be okay. So they say things at AA meetings. What are the things they say at AA meetings? They say, well, why did you drink? You know what they say? They say, because I stopped going to meetings. Why did you drink? Because I stopped going to meetings. So you think, this is what you think. Well, I'm not going to drink because I won't stop going to meetings. What you don't realize is that guy who stopped going to meetings, when he was in your place, he said to himself, I just won't stop going to meetings. So you need to ask this question. Why does a guy who stopped going to meetings at 15 years and stopped doing this stuff, why did he stop going to meetings? And he stopped going to meetings because of what they say in the big book right before step 6. That after step 5, we go and we say to ourselves into a quiet place, is the cement strong? Is the cement, did we use mortar without sand? Do we have a proper solid foundation? You know what the foundation is? It's not your sponsor. It's not AA. It's not the fellowship. You know, there's going to be times the fellowship ain't going to be around. Sponsor ain't going to be around. The foundation is God. The cement is faith. All men of faith have courage. It's not the perfect fourth step. It's not walking in a room and says, I'm really going to do a perfect fourth step now. Oh, now I'm really going to help a lot. Listen, you can help people until the cows come home. If you don't, you can do every step until the cows come home. If you do every step in the world and you don't have faith and you don't have faith in God, let me tell you something, it's mortar without sand. You know what an interesting little fellowship we have here. The whole fellowship is about God. The whole fellowship is working a program. Well, you got your program, I got, is it really, are there 17,000 different programs? Is that true? Is there 17,000? So some guy at an AA meeting, there's one group I know of for sure that's run by an atheist. He says, I'm an atheist. He brags about being an atheist. Nobody says anything to him. He runs the group. Nobody talks about God because, you know, the group leader is an atheist. Listen, I don't know whether you know this, but in our big book, there's actually a chapter to agnostics and atheists. No, really, it's in the big book. There's a chapter to agnostics. And you know what the chapter says? This sort of thinking must be abandoned. AA actually takes a stand against atheism. Bob Smith said, if you're an atheist or an agnostic or have some sort of intellectual pride which keeps you from understanding what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly father will never let you down. Nothing could be clearer. And this guy runs the group and he claims himself an atheist. And not one person will go up to him and say, listen, God bless you, you know, you're an atheist. God bless you, you're an atheist. It's great you're an atheist, you're going to be an atheist. But why don't you just shut the fuck up? Because you want to know something? That's not our program. That's not our program. And you're killing newcomers. You know? No, but if you talk about God, they'll come up and talk to you about that. They'll tell you you're killing newcomers. You ever think about that? The hypocrisy? Well, don't worry about AA. Well, listen, I don't even know whether AA is going to be around in a few years. They'll start voting. You know, nobody talks about God anymore. They say HP. They say something else. They try to say something in such a way so you don't think that they really believe in God. They don't want to be too strong on that because you may not like them or stuff like this. You know, I hope I've said enough to piss you off. I mean, I really do. If I haven't pissed off 25% of people that are going up and gossiping and talking about my back, I haven't said shit. You know what I mean? And besides, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with you. I can't tell you how many times I've walked out of an A room, pissed at somebody, or pissed at something that somebody said, and I'm thinking about him a week later, and then I have to put him down on a list and pray for him and talk to my sponsor until I finally say, man, that asshole was right. You know? I used to hate you, but now I love you and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, the idea that people could walk out of here and still be hating me a week from down the road, still be thinking about me, it gives me such fucking pleasure. it gives me a feeling of warmth, you know, that I've actually made, you know, when you throw a rock into a group of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. Never be afraid of talking about God in AA meeting. If God is the highest power, is he has all towers, he's the one who's going to say, you know what, Bill Wilson, you know why Bob was a little bit scared of Billy? Because if you read Dr. Bob Good Old Times, Bill Wilson, even from the beginning, he was from New York. And he was a Manhattanite, you know, and, you know, I'm from New York, we're pretty cool, you know, we don't want to get involved in the God thing. People laugh at us and everything like that, and our egos are so fragile. And Bill went up to, and this is true, right? It's right in our deal. He went up to Henrietta Seiberling. He said, you know, maybe we're talking too much about God, you know, because he got slapped down or something, so he got scared. And she looked at him and he said, you know, Bill, if you don't talk about God, he said, you might as well be the Rotary Club, because the only reason you're sober is because of God. Don't worry about pleasing alcoholics. They've been pleasing themselves for years. You worry about pleasing God. Because if you ain't talking about God, you're talking crap. And he says, finally, Bill agreed. See, Bill was like most of us in AA. You know, we'll say the Serenity Prayer, we'll hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer, and then we walk out and we put God in the glove compartment, we put God next to in the trunk next to the spare tire, only be pulled up at 3 o'clock in the morning when things get really bad and everything, and we don't talk about him too much because he's not the central fact of our lives. I know the big book says we can be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, experience much of heaven, and the great fact is this, and nothing less than this, that God has to be the central fact of your life. You can tell when God's the central fact of your life, when you're always thinking about him and you're always talking about him. I know, like when Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, I got to keep talking about him and telling other people. You can tell when God's the central fact of somebody's life when he's always talking about God and telling other people about God and thinking about God. You can tell when somebody's crazy about God, and you can tell when somebody's full of shit. At least I can. You know? Nothing wrong with hurting the feelings of an alcoholic or getting an alcoholic pissed off, you know, because that's the only way we learn. It's like when you get a shot of medicine, you know what I mean? Like you get a shot, you know, they put the shot in you, and at first there's like a little bit of a sting, and then comes the medicine. No sting, no medicine. Never worry about an alcoholic being pissed at you, you know what I mean? If he's not pissed at you, he doesn't even listen to you. He's not listening. He's just listening to himself. You know, because just like they say in Chapter of Gnostics, here's where the trouble begins, as soon as we start talking about God. People who are upset about God or people who talk about God, they're not sober. They're not emotionally sober. You know, when an old-timer talks about sobriety and says that man is sober, he's not talking about not drinking. When a guy points out that's a sober guy, he's not talking about not drinking, he's talking about something else.
We got a lot of guys that are not drinking, belong to the not drinking club in AA. Very few of them are going to make more than 20 years. And I'll tell you something, I sponsor a lot of guys that are over 20 years. There are a lot of people that do make it over 20 years and they're still not happy with their sobriety. They're not happy. I mean, you may find that hard. And you know why they're not happy? Because they managed to get 20 years and they're still lonely. Because they don't have a relationship with God. Their relationship hasn't grown since the day they walked in. It's just a fuzzy thing. You don't know who God is. He's not concrete. They don't have a conscious understanding of God, because that's what we're supposed to improve, our conscious understanding of God. Conscious, thinking about him all the time. So that's what I talk about these days. No, this is what I talk about. You talk about, listen, you know, A is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. This is my deal. This is what I talk about. Not a big deal. I don't think there's too many people that talk about this shit, is there? It's not going to kill you. You know, just go to another meeting. They'll talk. They'll give you a drunk along. They'll give you a drunk along, right? You're 15 years sober and you're trying to figure out why you're thumb-sucking crybaby and why you're still lonely and all that sort of stuff. You go to a meeting, they'll give you a drunk along. They'll tell you how to not drink and go to meetings. They'll tell you to sponsor a few more people or something. And that may work. You know, if you like to tread water, maybe you'll be lucky and you'll hear something that'll set you on the right path. I hope this helped a little bit to somebody, whoever was supposed to hear it. Thank you very much.